This week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
This is our time to show them and for all workers to realize that they have power and they need to use that power in order to create better outcomes for themselves, their families, their future.
UPS workers are fighting part-time work and preparing for a strike.
Anywhere where a new military base, a new weapons industry is trying to be built, we need to put black bands on that. The union movement should refuse to be involved in the build-up to war.
Australian unions and community organized to stop a U.S. nuclear submarine base at Port Kembla.
As the guardians of truth, artists have been central to the struggle against oppression. And no one understands that more fully than the artists who have documented the liberation movements of history. Dr. King always understood the power of culture and the importance of artists. He never failed to call upon us, and we never failed to embrace his wishes and to sustain his cause.
And we remember the legacy of civil rights activist, humanitarian, and world-renowned artist Harry Belafonte, who transitioned April 25th, 2023. He was 96. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. We were formerly COVID, Race, and Democracy. This program will continue to cover news and investigations of the COVID-19 pandemic and response, as well as other important issues impacting our world today. I'm your host, Akua Holt. Today, we go to the front lines of workers' struggles to mark the International Workers' Day on May 1st. 240,000 UPS Teamsters may go on strike on August 1st when their contract expires. They are fighting against the attacks on part-time workers and linking up with Amazon and postal workers for United Fight. Richard Hooks, Secretary Treasurer of Philadelphia Teamsters Local 623, spoke to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
This struggle is really for the soul of labor. You're talking about the largest private sector contract in America. 340,000 workers are preparing to hit the street if need be against the number one logistics company in the world. Everything that UPS has is predicated on what the Teamsters do. And this is our time to show them and for all workers to realize that they have power and they need to use that power in order to create better outcomes for themselves, their families, their future. And that's what this struggle is about. It's about workers standing up to the boss, standing up to these employers, standing up to the companies, and letting them know that everything that they have is based off their labor.
And the company UPS is very profitable, yet the workers, particularly part-time workers, is that still a problem after your last contract?
Yes. About 65 to 70% of UPS's workforce are part-time workers, and they do exploit those workers. They pay them very, very minimal. They overwork them. They work the hardest, and they get treated very, very badly. And I think in this contract fight, this contract struggle, I believe that they're going to see that their labor will be rewarded. Not just their labor, but all labor within the classifications of UPS. But for far too long, the part-timers have been disrespected. And I believe this time around, they're going to see that people are paying attention. And if UPS is not paying attention, then all those part-timers, along with the full-timers, are going to be on the street August 1st.
And what preparation is there being made to prepare for this? Because during the Kerry administration, there were rallies around the country. He had a campaign, full-time wages for part-time workers. Is there a political campaign going on nationally to make American workers understand the importance of this struggle?
Absolutely. There has been a contract campaign probably for the last year and a half, 2 years, to get everybody on the same page because this is very, very important. We still use that moniker. We tweaked it a little bit back in 97. Ron and Kerry had a slogan that says part-time America doesn't work. And so what we've adopted here at 623 is we're saying that part-time America still STEAL doesn't work, because that's what the company is doing. They're stealing from these workers. During the pandemic, man, we worked very, very hard. We sacrificed a lot to get this company all these profits, and for us not to be able to share in those profits is a shame. And so this campaign has been going for almost 2 years now. Everybody's engaged. Everybody is ready to fight. And if need be, everybody is ready to walk.
You're not alone, the UPS workers, because other logistic workers, Amazon and FedEx, have also faced a fight to protect their conditions, particularly during COVID, and also the exploitation of these workers. What do you think the effect of a strike would be? And what do you think about the idea of the Amazon and FedEx workers joining the UPS workers?
Well, it's funny you said that. We actually had a panel discussion here a couple of weeks ago with some Amazon workers, UPS workers, and some postal workers. And because we talked about their very thing about joining up together to fight Amazon, UPS, you know, and these corporations like that, because when we win this struggle at UPS, it's going to benefit the workers at Amazon, FedEx, and the postal service, because we do primarily the same work. And our theme coming out of that meeting was, what would happen if all logistical workers, union and non-union, join up together and show these big corporations that we have the power. We're moving the work. We're delivering the work. We're sorting the work, right? We're doing all these things, not the company. You make the billions off of what we provide, not what the company provides. And so we talked about that, and it's a beautiful thing, because now I think all these different companies, union and non-union, are starting to understand that there's power in the worker. And if we join together, we can win this struggle.
And there's a growing strike wave throughout the United States. There were 48,000 workers in California, UC, UAW workers, graduate students. Also, the auto workers contract is coming out, coming in this summer. It seems like these strike wave may force workers to, as a class, come together. Do you see the prospects of some of these struggles coming together? Because they're fighting over the same issues, COLA, survival with the inflation, and working conditions.
Absolutely. And I think that's where you're going to see this more militant workforce, again, whether it's union or non-union, because people are starting to see that there's power in unity, power in solidarity. We like to call it here weaponizing solidarity, man, using that solidarity as a weapon against the companies, these companies, because they can't beat all of us together. You know, they can hand pick here, they can pick this one off over here, that one there. But when we join together, there's nothing more powerful than labor, nothing. And we have to start realizing that and working toward that and working together against these employers.
And what can people do, workers do, to support the UPS workers?
Well, talk to the people in your community. If you, the faith-based community, talk to the people at your jobs. Just tell them, you know, when you see your delivery driver, tell them that you have their back. And I'll also get your city councilman, your local government, state government, federal government involved in this struggle, because it's going to take all of us to win this fight. So if you're a worker out there and you're listening, and you know you work, no matter where you work at, just talk to your coworkers about this struggle and what it could do for you and your situation.
So on May Day 2023, it sounds like you're optimistic that there's some changes coming.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because the workers have had enough. This pandemic has pushed workers to the brink, and they're not going to take it anymore. You know, when this pandemic, the America, the world, they depended on the worker. You know, there's nothing moves unless the worker did it. And I think what happened is now the worker sees the importance of their labor, and they're not just going to let it just be shortchanged and disrespected and disregarded. And now they're going to fight for dignity and respect, not only for wages, but also in their quality of life and who they are as people.
That was Richard Hooks, Secretary Treasurer of Philadelphia Teamsters Local 623. Local members, 65% of whom work part-time, are gearing up for a strike and linking up with Amazon and U.S. Postal office workers.
Yeah! Cablevision and the Dolphins don't want to give you the dignity and the respect that you deserve. It's you that did all the work to make him rich. rich, rich, rich. And he's certainly not making you rich.
It makes sense to add sex. 2 years you've been absent. Looking for a contract, instead you give us nonsense. Make me nauseous, playing corporate offense. Lawyers in my face can't stand union busting. Hustling, grinding, wondering what's next. JD in a straight shot to my vein pumping. American dream, there's no access. Feeling like a fiend, overflowing pockets. Eating all the profits, labor, suffering. Jobs overseas while the state stays jobless. I see all the action, rich skins, tax cuts. All faith in him, in the end, it's gotten trust.
That's right.
Yeah. Turned down for what?
Check it out.
Go.
700 days, 2 years as a slave in a Brooklyn cave. Where's my damn raise? Caught up in a maze. Negotiation games. Supervisors terrorizing with their false claims. It's a damn shame. I got to play this game. I'm going through the pain and all the mental strain. I got to maintain. The devil's taking aim, but my righteous breastplate guards me from the flames.
Strike, 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 strike.
Those were Cablevision Techs rapping about their struggle for justice on the job with their latest song, Strike. Unions in Chile have called for opening the books of the AFL-CIO on its collaboration with the CIA in the overthrow of the socialist government of Salvador Allende and the arrest, torture, and deaths of thousands of workers and their families 50 years ago in 1973. Chilean American unionist Elizabeth Milos has more.
This is the 50th anniversary of Chile's 9/11, in which a military coup overturned the Allende government and literally thousands of trade unionists and their families were jailed and assassinated. U.S. economist Milton Friedman and his Chicago boys were brought in to completely reorganize the economy to make it a free market controlled by U.S. multinational corporations. The AFL-CIO, through the American Institute of Free Labor Development, with the CIA, was centrally involved in this coup. And Chilean trade unionists on the 50th anniversary have issued a statement to U.S. workers and to the AFL-CIO to take responsibility for this and the policies which still remained 50 years after the coup. The AFL-CIO Solidarity Center is also getting $75 million from the U.S. government's National Endowment for Democracy for its international operations. I talk with Chilean unionists from the Committee in Defense of Human and Trade Union Rights, Glotario Blest, about their letter and what they are saying to U.S. workers on May Day 2023.
One very strong reason for us to make this statement, because we feel that without international links with the working class everywhere in the world, especially in the area that is linked to us, like America, Central America, Latin America, we will not reach anything. Because capitalism is global. The strategic are global and the same in everywhere. And what is their strength? That they are organized and we are not. And we are fighting in a single way in each country. There, we've been defeated many times. Remember when Uruguay, Chile, Peru, and all these countries were making approach to build a democratic socialist society. Each of one, one by one, they were defeated. First one, the first festival was Uruguay 72, Chile 73, before was Peru, etc. With Velasco Alvarado, has this cooperative system that was a very progressive government. Anyway, what we're asking is to remember our experience where AFL-CIO, CIA was funding our coup d'etats, where they helped to destroy our workers' movement and peasant organization, all kind of organization, labor organization in this country, and they are trying to do the same by different means, more sophisticated, but they are doing almost the same. For example, the coup d'etat now is not, they do not use it very much, but they prefer to use the corruption to buy political leaders, especially with this foundation and with CIA money. I mean, Lagos was when all this group, Lagos, Concertación, were funded by the CIA. Yeah, they were preparing the United States They have their group, Arturo Valenzuela, who is the advisor to Obama. He's the advisor for CIA, an expert in Latin America. He's a Chilean. And he command the Lagos group, Valdez, Ominami, etc. They all have been programmed from the states before they came to the so-called democracy. So it's so important because for us in America is where, because we belong to that area where they divided the world in Yalta, Potsdam. Yeah, Allende, they told him, we cannot, the Russians, when we went to Russia to sell copper, they told us we cannot do anything because that part is belong to the American geopolitical area.
Didn't recently this Marie Richardson, she's this woman leader of the Central Command of the U.S. military, Central Command. She went to Chile, didn't she? And when she was in Chile, she said, oh, these resources are too important for us. We have to up our game or something like that. We have to defend these resources because they're way too important, the lithium and all these copper and rare metals. She was naming the resources that exist in Chile as if they were her resources, as if they were the US government resources, right? And she said, we need to defend it, as if, first of all, defend it from who or what? And second,
from the Russians and the Chinese.
Right. She said that, right. In other words, you know,
we have to consider seriously to protect our interest in this region.
Our interest, exactly. Even 50 years later, they're still on Chilean soil saying it's their resources.
With the lithium, that we have the third country in the world with more lithium, Mexico, Bolivia, and others are talking about getting together with the lithium resources. What Boris said, no, thank you. No, so, he rejects the idea.
So he's not joining the rest of Latin America.
A little national group here in Chile, but it's going to be controlled by the private sector, and it's already controlled.
How does Mayday look for Chile today?
It's going to be a very strong day for us because also last year they killed one of our journalists and human rights, a young woman, and they wounded 9 others in that demonstration, that march of the 1st of May. And the provocations already are in the air against us and against the 50 years commemoration also. And but we are going to be there, and we are very worried about security, the security of our people. But we decided anyway, especially this 1st of May in the context of the 50 years of the coup d'etat, to make a big demonstration. That's the spirit for the 1st of May.
That was Ernesto Rojas Urbina of the Chilean Committee for Human and Union Rights speaking to Chilean American Unionist Elizabeth Milos.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. De pie cantar que vamos a triunfar. Avanzan ya banderas de unidad. Y tú vendrás marchando junto a mí. Y así verás tu canto y tu bandera florecer. La luz de un rojo amanecer anuncia ya la vida que vendrá. Y ahora el pueblo que se alza en la lucha con voz de gigante gritando adelante. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. El pueblo unido jamás será.
That was music by Inti Illimani. Workers and unions in Australia are growing increasingly angry about the plans of the US, the UK, and their own Labour Party government to build a nuclear submarine base on the East Coast port of Kembla. Teachers' unions and the Maritime Union of Australia will rally against the base plan on May 6. anti-war activist and socialist Luke Hocking spoke to Pacifica Steve Seltzer.
The May the 6th event is actually really promising, really important event, because it's not just organized through our campaign group, but mainly through the South Coast Labor Council, so the trade union body, peak trade union body for the region. So it's going to be a trade union demonstration, you know, like workers from all over Wollongong, all over, even coming down from Sydney, are going to be coming down to say no to the drive to war and no to the nuclear submarine base.
And what would the effect be of a U.S. nuclear sub base in that port?
Before you even talk about what's wrong with, like, the nuclear-powered submarines, all the things that can go wrong, like, there's been over a dozen incidents released of the U.K. submarines having accidents. So, you know, before you even talk about all of that, there's just the effect that having a military base in a town, and especially a military base that's going to host foreign troops, has just on the local community, you know? Like, violence goes up, like, you know, instances of sexual assaults go up. This happens in, like, Okinawa in Japan, where there's military bases, American military bases. It happens everywhere where military bases are put. So it's, before you even talk about the problems, particularly of the nuclear subs, it's like, it's going to transform our town, you know, and not for the better.
There's some opposition in the labor movement to this agreement and the base. Why don't you talk about that opposition? Because in the United States, most of the unions, the AFL-CIO, are supporting the military buildup and the encirclement of China. They seem to have bought the line that China is a threat to the United States.
To be honest, it's the case that most of the union movement here is also, you know, they're also guilty of that. So the trade union movement in Australia, they're mostly politically aligned to the Australian Labor Party, who are in government right now. And so they're the ones who are pursuing the AUKUS alliance. They're the ones who are, you know, trying to put this nuclear submarine base in our town. But that said, there's a history of, like, anti-nuclear campaigning, particularly in the Australian union movement, that means that a few unions, like the Electricians Union, the Maritime Union, that's the Wharfies here, they have a long-standing position. And actually, on a, you know, theoretically, the ACTU, the highest, the confederation of the trade union movement in this country, they have, on paper, an anti-nuclear policy. So it's about holding them to that as far as we're concerned. But locally, the unions have been much better. So, you know, like I said, the South Coast Labor Council, they've called this demonstration. They're really unhappy with having this nuclear base here, you know, partly on the basis of what it's going to do to the local community, but also, you know, the effects that it's going to have on workers here, like, not just in the narrow kind of, you know, economistic sense that it's going to be bad for workers if a bunch of, you know, future, like, industry is barred because the military doesn't like it or whatever, but it's going to be bad for, you know, the workers who have to live in this part of the world. And it's going to be bad for workers all across the world if, you know, the war drive keeps going. So I think seeing that it's a really positive development that the union movement locally is serious about fighting against this base. And that gives us strength that, you know, we wouldn't have otherwise.
And the United States has been quite actively involved in Australia, getting Australia supports for U.S. military and political operations around the world. It's also involved in removing a prime minister in Australia.
Yeah. I mean, partly, you know, I think it's obviously different for you guys over there. But here we have to, I think, emphasize that our main enemy is our own capitalist class, you know, the rich and powerful in our own country, that they actually were the main people orchestrating the Whitlam dismissal. It's like a constitutional coup that happened in the 70s here. And, you know, they did have support from, like the American establishment, the British establishment too. But in the end, I think, you know, ultimately for us here in this country, we need to be clear that it's not like Australia just does whatever America says, it's bullied by America or anything like that. The Australian capitalist class and the Australian government, they pursue the US alliance because it helps them to pursue their own interests, you know, in the region, their imperialist interests in the Pacific and in, Southeast Asia, like more generally.
And there's going to be a rally in conjunction with yours in Port Kembla in San Francisco on May the 6th. What do you say to Americans? What do you suggest that they do and around the world to oppose this expansion of militarization in Asia?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got a big struggle ahead of us, I think, you know. America is really committed to confronting China. The last thing they want is an imperialist competitor that can actually match them economically, that can outstrip them economically. And I think America knows that, you know, and the Biden administration and the American government knows that what they've got is they have a bunch of guns and a bunch more guns than anyone else. And I think that they want to leverage that into, you know, economic advantage. And so it's going to be difficult, I think, to stop this war drive, but we have to build now. You know, workers around the world have to fight against the drive to war. We have to build protests wherever we can, and where it's possible, and especially where we have the industrial strength and the unions are, you know, strong enough to be in a position to, we need to be trying to actually stop the basis for this war. We need to be striking against the war industries. We need to be anywhere where a new military base, a new weapons industry is trying to be built. We need to put black bans on that. The union movement should refuse to be involved in the build up to war as much as we can. So, I mean, that's kind of the dream. That's where we're, you know, aiming for, but we're a long way from that in Australia today. And it seems like, from what I know, you know, there's been some pretty cool stuff in America, unionization drives and things like that in the last couple of years, but probably still some ways off that kind of thing. But we have to build now, you know, we have to be involved in whatever struggles we can now to lay the basis for being able to fully confront imperialism in general, but the whole project of the ruling classes of both our countries, which are, you know, marching along arm in arm towards this terrible war.
That was Luke Hocking of the Wollongong Against War and Nukes speaking to Pacifica Steve Zeltzer.
Raised and barricades, believe me, man, I'm down. Tyrants, bloodsuckers, and bagmen got us picking through the crumbs. Raise your voices all together, motherfucker, here we come.
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long.
Slums in Korea, open fire with a guitar, bass, and drums. Down in Gaza, down in Fresno, out your door and down your street. Are you gonna stand around, or are you gonna be free?
Worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud all night long. Hang on, man, it won't be long. Worldwide rebel songs, worldwide rebel songs, sing out loud.
That was Worldwide Rebel Song by Tom Morello. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Akua Holt. Chinese public and private businesses have taken over most of uranium and marble mines in Namibia. In 2020 at the Rössing mine, owners fired union leaders who have been fighting to get their jobs back for over 3 years. At a panel on the May Day weekend, they spoke out about their struggle.
Rössing mine is in Namibia, which was a colony of South Africa until 1990, when it had to let go its control. And Namibia is now a separate entity, but very much integrated in South Africa. But the leadership in Namibia, that SWAPO, that was a liberation movement, which has now turned completely rotten. And is ending up as an anti-worker organization. Well, it's an anti-worker government, and none of the existing laws which apply to trade union rights, you know, are being observed, and the workers are struggling, you know, against the odds. Rossing mine, just to illustrate, it's an uranium mine which was previously controlled by Rio Tinto. Rio Tinto is not known for being good to trade unions, but it had a recognition with the local leadership, the branch leadership of the mine workers union. And as soon as the Chinese state corporation, this is a state which claims to be socialist, when they took over, they soon after that, they broke the agreement. And then when the workers resisted, they fired them. So the leadership of the union has been fired, we've been victimized, and they've been struggling for 3 years. It's incredible to think that they've managed to survive all this time in terrible conditions. They're isolated. Namibia is not a very big, well, it's a big country, but there's not a big population. And it's, you know, the workers are struggling, you know, to survive under those conditions.
Thank you. And also joining us is George Martin with the Rossing Uranium Workers at the Rossing Mine in Namibia.
Just a brief introduction on our case, comrades. We were dismissed on the 29th of September, 2020. And since then, we've been fighting our case in the arbitration at the Labor Commissioner's Office for Arbitration. First of all, what happened, we were elected into office in 2017 for our first term, where we served on the branch levels, at the branch level as representatives. When we took over office at Rossing Uranium Mine, In 2019, Rossing Uranium, Rio Tinto sold their major shareholding to a company called China National Nuclear Corporation. That was in June 2019. It bought majority shareholding in Rossing, 68.64%. That was bought by the new shareholding, which is a company that is based in China, a state-owned company. We as workers feel that the workers should be getting, or Rio Tinto should donate part of his shareholding to the employees, which is we demanded that Rio Tinto at least donate about 18% shares to the workers, of which 7% will be donated to the government, and then the 11% will be given to the employees of Rossing. The offer was turned down, because Rio Tinto did not want to go into negotiations of that. We approached the new company, of which they said they are not interested in donating shares. So as a branch executive, we fought the company in a lot of things, and they saw that they could not beat us in the things that they wanted to change. Major things was they wanted to renegotiate our procedural agreement, of which they said we agreed in 2011 to renegotiate on that matter, of which a letter that was written by the BEC, the branch executive, in March 2020 to challenge them. And we asked a lot of questions to when this agreement happened, who were the people that agreed, and that letter was never replied to or responded to by the company. So during June 2020, the 1st of June 2020, we received a letter from the company stating that coming 1st of July 2020, we should vacate the boardroom. Our full-time chairperson's office will no longer exist. And then stationery and everything that the office of the union board would no longer be given. They will only recognize the full-time shop steward's office. Of which we responded to them to say that these were things that were negotiated, the benefits were negotiated with the company. The company cannot unilaterally change this. We requested for a meeting so that we can at least negotiate or talk about this, so that we can have or find common ground on this issue. Fast track to that, the company decided to suspend us on the 2nd of July, 2020.
Also joining us is Comrade Haywood Bukes. He's a labor lawyer, and he has been representing the Fishermen Association in Namibia. They were also disenfranchised. Their jobs were destroyed as a result of corruption by the government of Namibia. We were paid off. The Justice Minister of Fisheries
and they lost their jobs, and he has represented other workers in Namibia. And now he has come under a vicious attack by the Namibian government and judiciary, and they're trying to take away his right to practice law and also put him away, jail him. So welcome, Haywood.
This is a question of the Chinese and the Namibian state are both owners of these mines. Both these parties are fighting the working class. The serious matter is that the right to freedom of association, which Namibian workers have fought for and paid for with many with their lives since 1971, is being wiped from the table. That is the situation. And in fact, unfortunately, we came too late on the scene when the case was already registered as an unfair dismissal, because it's not an unfair dismissal case. It is a case of a renunciation of the collective agreement, illegal, unlawful. It's illegal. It's not unlawful. It's illegal. It's a criminal renunciation of the collective agreement by the Chinese and by the Namibian government. Then secondly, it is renunciation of the right of to freedom of association, which the Namibians working class have fought for. These are, in short, what is happening here. The Chinese are doing what the Western imperialists are slightly reluctant to do. But I see that with the mine workers in the USA, the bosses have resorted to the same tactics of wanting to destroy the union for those workers who had striked so long. This is what they are clearly out to do, is to smash the union movement internationally. The Chinese are doing it quite openly. The other imperialists who are also employing the Namibian working class are looking with their lips sealed of what is going on. And when the Chinese are finished here, there will be no union movement. We have to fight those elements in the workers' movement in these industrialized countries who are continuing the lie that China is a progressive state. That's in the interest of the working class. Point is, information must be spread on what the Chinese are doing.
That was a report on the struggle of Namibia Rossing Mines. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Akua Holt. In 2005, the late civil rights activist, humanitarian, and performer Mr. Harry Belafonte founded the Gathering for Justice, an organization dedicated to ending the crises of caging youth in the United States. Here is Harry Belafonte speaking at the National Gathering for Justice in Oakland, California, November 2007.
I have always believed that culture is the most powerful force in human existence. In culture resides artists. And as creators of art, artists have been throughout history the supreme protectors of truth. It is through art that we know our past, our history, and who are we and who we are, and what brings things to us, and what we do with things around us. As the guardians of truth, artists have been central to the struggle against oppression, and no one understands that more fully than the artists who have documented the liberation movements of history. Dr. King always understood the power of culture and the importance of artists. He never failed to call upon us, and we never failed to embrace his wishes and to sustain his cause. From the time of slavery, the world could only know the truth of the experience of Africans through the songs we sang, the words we spoke, in our plea to the heavens for liberation, and the secrets that passed among us orally in our resistance to tyranny. The oral tradition was one of our greatest tools of liberation, and that fact never changed, that is, until now. The lords of commerce have strangled culture and holds it in bondage, and many artists have submitted to that villainy. Instead of triumphant songs and stories that would inspire us to overcome the anguish of the day, we have capitulated to the will of the banks. The heart of black culture, where so much of our history resides, instead of being a mighty force in the forefront of today's struggle, is muted by the 21st minstrels, the 21st century minstrels, who for the price of celebrity bow before their masters. Through their masks of buffoonery and keeping their masters happy, they have failed to see that the gold that hangs around their necks and the diamonds that glitter on their fingers are nothing more than the chains of slavery, hardly any different than the chains that held our African ancestors in slavery. We are gathered here today to seek change, to change all those wrongs and much more. It is for us to but recall our history, and in so doing, once again realize that all things are possible. The slaver knows that if they control what people know, they can control what people do. They have repeatedly drummed into us through the instruments of communication the idea that the civil rights movement is a relic of the past, that it sits somewhere in the dustbins of history. What it was is no longer applicable, they say, to the solutions needed in confronting the great problems of today. Most of the nation bought that scam. Many have yielded to the tragic belief that the machine is invincible. If you stay the course we're embarking on, you will not be spared the wrath of the powerful. They will seek to destroy you. Their history is well documented. You cannot resist their interests and return, expect their response to be benevolent. Their hands are washed in blood, the blood of past history, and it's washed in blood today. You and I will not be exempt from their tyranny and their villainy. We will not be exempt from it. But you must understand the most precious and the most powerful weapon in the arsenal of choice stands in us. It's in our hands. It's in our hands, and it is called the weapon of nonviolence. It is the most powerful tool known to humankind. And those who have dared to practice that philosophy have paid a price. Gandhi was assassinated. Dr. King was assassinated. Malcolm X was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. Allende was assassinated. Lumumba was assassinated. I can go on and on because the list is endless. And I dare tell you now that some of you in this room, some of us in this room, are targeted. We too could become victims of assassination by those who would deter us towards a more glorious path in human development. You are the only hope. And Dr. King talked about the firemen. He said, I'm not a racist, but Black America and the peoples of color of the earth must understand that they are the redeemers of anything that could be considered human glory. When I saw that young child in St. Petersburg being handcuffed, I understood that America had reached a new depth of villainy. I could not understand how that child could have been so tortured and humiliated, and that the streets of America were not filled with Black men and Black women, Black workers, people who said this villainy will go no further. And she was not an exception to the rule. There are hundreds of such children around the nation. How can we permit this to linger unabated? Who are we? What are we expecting of life? What are we thinking about that makes us so mindless and so incapacitated? Well, I say we are not mindless, and we're not incapacitated. And your presence here is testimony to that fact. The future of the world lies in the hands of youth. And that's not just hyperbole. That's a fact. Let me tell you that when I met Dr. King, he was 24 years old. I was 26. When I looked around, when I found a mindless Black leadership and a white world that was caught up in fanciful things that had nothing to do with oppression and the relief of it, we had to turn to new voices and new choices. And those who stepped into the breach, those who filled the gap and filled it gloriously, were young men and women who were 17 years old and 18 years old and 16 years old. John Lewis, glorious congressman, was 17 years old, preaching to chickens. Julian Bond was 18 years old. Diane Nash was 17 years old and with child. I can go on and on. Thousands of young people all over this country in the SDS and in other branches of social organization rose up and seized the navigation of this country. And they served us well. They stopped the war in Vietnam. They brought the government to its knees. They changed the horizon of the future. And there's nothing that says you can't do the same. Do not be afraid. There's nothing to fear, like Roosevelt said, but fear itself. Step out. Look him in the eye and tell him your day is done, brother. Your time is over. We will take this no longer. And it is not just us who sit here that say this. I've taken Nani Alejandras, and he took me, and Bo Taylor, and Bloods and Crips, and young people. We've gone to Latin America and looked at our Latin American brothers and sisters in Colombia, in Bolivia, in Venezuela, in Brazil, in Guatemala, in Mexico, and they have risen up by the millions to say an end to exploitation, an end to oppression. We've gone through Africa, all over the continent together, and reached out to young Africans who say the same thing. And their arms are open wide. People keep calling us minorities. We're not a minority. Ain't nothing minor about us. We're not a minority. We're the majority. And we got to start acting like that. Yes, I can be charged with all sorts of things and expect to be. You want to be charged with what? Sedition? They're going to call me what? Anti-patriotic? They're going to say that I am violently seeking to overthrow the government? Well, not all of that is true. But I am completely and fully devoted to change.
The Gathering for Justice, founded by Harry Belafonte, invites people to explore the intersection of arts, culture, and the movement for Black and Brown liberation. The entire speech was aired on Hard Knock Radio, March 1, 2022, by host and producer Davey D. Harry Belafonte was one of the most successful Jamaican-American pop stars, as he popularized the Caribbean musical style with an international audience in the 1950s. His breakthrough album, Calypso, 1956, was the first million-dollar LP by a single artist worldwide. Belafonte is known for his recording of the Banana Boat song with its signature lyric, Deo. He has recorded and performed in many genres, including blues, folk, gospel, show tunes, and American standards. He also starred in several blockbuster films. Mr. Belafonte stated the great Paul Robeson was his mentor. During the 1950s and 60s civil rights movement, he was a close confidant of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As he later recalled, Paul Robeson had been my first great formative influence. You might say he gave me my backbone. Martin King was the second. He nourished my soul. Harry Belafonte was born on March 1, 1927, and made his transition on April 25, 2023. He was 96. Thanks to Fahima Sack of WPFW for producing this segment.
As I wandered round the world, so lost and angry, he called me home and reached out for my hand. He spoke with words that sounded more like music, words my heart could finally understand. And as we walked, the people gathered round us. Open arms, the only weapons that they bore. He wove us into cloth of many colors. Armed with love, he marched us off to war. And the song I sing, I sing for you, sweet Martin Luther King. And the song I sing for you, sweet Martin Luther King. For he spoke of love, more they feared him. More he spoke the truth, their lies would grow. And suddenly, with no goodbyes, we lost him. My sweet black rose of peace, I miss you.
Harry Belafonte performing a song he dedicated to Dr. Martin Luther King. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by Akua Holt and Steve Zeltzer and edited by Paulina Vasiliev. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalism-race-democracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button and follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD. I've been your host, Akua Holt. Thanks for listening. Before we go, I leave you with this quote. Movements don't die because struggle doesn't die. Harry Belafonte.